Hey, what's up, Pelicans fans? You are listening to the Bird Rights here on Nothing But Net Network on Dash Radio. For more breakdowns on the Pelicans, including interviews with coaches, journalists, and opposing experts, go to iTunes right now, search the Bird Rights, and subscribe today. Pels fans, welcome to what promises to be a very depressing podcast here on the Bird Calls. I'm your host, Preston Ellis, and I have lethargy fatigue, and you should too. Let's be miserable together. This, of course, is the subject to today's article on thebirdrights.com posted by the Kevin Berrios. Kevin, have you recovered yet?
Yeah, you know, if you saw, I mentioned in there that I was invited to go see some Jello wrestling. Well, the person who invited me came over after, so things got much better.
Yeah, it looks like you spent like a good hour writing this recap. Are you sure it wasn't 1 o'clock in the morning when you went over to watch this Jello wrestling exhibition?
I stayed home. It came to me.
Oh, that worked out nicely. Yes. You guys, be sure to check out Kevin's article where he gives meaning to the term diarrhea casserole, which in itself is worth the read alone. And of course, Ali Cosell, who's typically our guest on this roundtable discussion with Kevin, was so disappointed in what he saw. I'm not going to tell you aloud what he wrote to Kevin and I via direct messages last night, but let's just say it was apocalyptic. So in his place will be David Grubb of Crescent City Sports. What's up, dude?
Man, I'm always glad to be here with you. It's always fun.
We're glad to have you, because if Kevin and I just went back and forth with this agony and despair, I think it would get old pretty quickly. You're going to spice things up for us. And you know what, guys? Usually I have like planned out a script. And of course, there's the usual talking points, you know, who to blame, three guard lineups, Alvin Gentry, should we fire him? What's going on with Boogie? What's going on with AD? But you know what? I'm just going to dive into the mailbag first, because these fans like kind of sum up in a really grandiose way how everybody's feeling, just this magnitude of despair, this frustration, the let's get out of here. Let's find a Michael McNamara was posting stuff all over Twitter about how it's time to find a new team to root for. Just hilarious stuff, although I know that he's absolutely sincere about it. But let's start with you, Kevin. This question is from Eagles 2001. We're starting off with a bang. Is there any hope for this defense?
I mean, you have to say that the hope comes with Solomon Hill getting back in a little bit. I mean, I'm not expecting 100% turnaround, and obviously he's going to take some time to adjust, but we haven't had a perimeter defender besides Drew Holiday on this team yet. I mean, Etwan Moore's regressed a little bit, I feel, on that side. He always is going to be guarding a guy that's bigger than him for most of the game, and he's not a really laterally quick player for all the good things that he does. He obviously has weaknesses, and that's one of them. So, I mean, we saw last night with Wiggins abusing him down in the post. He can't guard somebody that big, you know. So having another player like Hill, who is a good perimeter defender out there, is going to help, because a lot of our problems come from not being able to stay in front of cutters. And people get into the basket. So I think that's one thing to look at. And also, you know, if Tony Allen gets some kind of semblance of what he could be, I mean, he looked pretty bad before going out. He wasn't the defensive guy that we're used to seeing, but I mean, he's getting up in age and we can expect a regression. But if we can at least get, you know, 5 to 7 good minutes of defense out of him a game going forward, then yeah, there's things to look at where we can improve. But also, if just somebody could light a fire under the players, we'd take a step forward, because you're seeing lazy defensive rotations. You're seeing people not boxing out, giving up second chance points. So, you know, there's effort thing, and that's something tangible that seems like you should be able to fix, but they haven't fixed it for whatever reason. They can't bring that consistency every week in effort. So, you know, who do you blame for that? People want to debate over that. Is it coaching? Is it players? It's both. And it's not necessarily the coach's job to make a grown person be prepared and energized and engaged and do their job every day. But let's face it, we all fade and we all slip. And having a person that can speak to you the right way and that inspires you personally, it would help and benefit. And I guess Alvin Gentry isn't that. I mean, I've never been a fan of Alvin Gentry, so like, it's not like I'm jumping on this fire train. I just never wanted him here to begin with. I remember the day he was, when I read that he was asked to be, to come interview for the job, I let out a groan at my computer. I was like, ugh. And then I think anytime anybody asked me who you want to be the coach, I'd be like, anybody but Alvin Gentry. And then of course we hired Alvin Gentry. So I think it's definitely a combination of both, and both are accountable for it. I'm going to let David jump in, I guess, because I'm just going to keep rambling on the same kind of negativeness about the effort if I don't stop myself.
All right. Sorry. Go ahead, David. I'm just going to say really quickly talking about having Solomon Hill and Tony Allen back, it very similar to the vein of having Quincy Pondexter 2 or 3 years ago when he came in and he kind of was the leader on the floor that Pelicans were so sorely lacking, not just defensively, but a great communicator, firing everybody up, bringing intensity every time on the floor. And the Pelicans don't have that. And that's something firing Alvin Gentry is not going to change, is you don't have a guy who plays well for the Pelicans. And Tony Allen certainly didn't play well, but he fought every second he was on the floor. Who can anyone step up and be that leader, David?
I think that's the question you have to ask about this franchise as a whole, is who is the leader? And we talked about this a little bit before, but I do believe it's time to start questioning Anthony Davis's leadership abilities as a player. What control does he have within the locker room and within the organization? Whose team are, who are they going to model themselves after? Is this about DeMarcus? Is this about Rondo? Is this about Anthony? You know, what's the identity of this team? And you still, you know, you seem to have an identity offensively, but not really, because though they can score a lot of points, we know that they struggle in the half court, especially late game situations. So they haven't established themselves as a team that can close. And then defensively, there's not a single player in the rotation this year that's met their defensive numbers from last year. So you look at a guy like DeMarcus Cousins, who's never played on a defense that's been better than 20th in the league, and you can say that, well, he had bad teammates before, but the Kings are a better defensive team this year than they were last year with him. The Pelicans are a worse defensive team since he arrived in New Orleans. His numbers would put him in the lower tier of starting centers in the league. And then you look at the regression with Anthony Davis's defense. You look at Drew Holiday's defense has regressed. And, of course, you look at a guy like Etuan Moore, who, as we've said, is playing out of position at the small forward spot. And from a night-to-night basis, he's getting beat up by larger players on the defensive end. And when you look at guys, you go deeper into the advanced stats and you look for things that confirm what you're seeing, and the value over replacement players. Most of these guys are no better than just putting in an average player in the league. The only two guys who appear in the top 20 are, of course, Cousins and Davis. And their positions relative to last year, Davis has come backwards while Cousins has kind of ascended a bit, even though Anthony's been more efficient. So what you're seeing is that this is a mediocre team. They're at 500, which is what they should be, because even if you go by the best guesses, based on their offensive and defensive stats, they should maybe be one game better or maybe be one game worse. This is what they are as a franchise. They're a 500 franchise. And with the prospects of five guys leaving as free agents at the end of this season, and not a lot out there in the positions that they need most in free agency at point guard and at backup big, you wonder. This may be the only year you get to see this group. And I think that's probably a good thing. But what's the long-term plan after that?
I'm going to throw this over to Kevin. Analogy that you can either agree or disagree with, but basically a lot of national media types like to imagine a world in which Darko Milicic is not the second overall pick by the Detroit Pistons. I can't remember what year it was. I want to say 2007. And instead, Carmelo Anthony goes into that available slot, and Carmelo gets to learn from the guys like Tayshaun Prince and Ben Wallace and Chauncey Billups. Every time I open up this goddamn ESPN box score thing, it auto-plays these videos, and it drives me absolutely bonkers. So I don't know if I'm going to use ESPN anymore just to go off topic. It's so distracting. I'm glad you guys can't hear it. But What I'm basically boiling this down to, Kevin, for you is, you know, Anthony Davis, let's say San Antonio, by some miracle, acquires a draft pick that ends up, you know, first overall the year that Anthony Davis is drafted, I want to say 2012, and he learns the right way from Greg Popovich. Is Anthony Davis a better player and a better leader than he would have been via being drafted by the New Orleans Pelicans?
I mean, I think that's always an interesting conversation, and I do agree that sometimes the situation you get drafted into affects the player you become, and possibly the man you become, I guess. But I mean, I feel like when Anthony Davis came in, we got like a hard worker, a guy who led by example, wasn't outspoken. I don't think even if he went to like a Spurs organization that he would be like an outspoken vocal leader or anything like that. I mean, look at Kawhi Leonard. I think they kind of have a similar, it's different, but it like Anthony Davis has like the friendly side of Kawhi's like killer instinct. I'm going to lead by example and not through a voice or be vocal or really have this kind of personality that I put out there in the media, you know. They're more, I think Anthony Davis is more goofy and Kawhi Leonard is more serious, I guess. But so I don't think you would have ever gotten like this big rah-rah guy or anything out of him, no matter where he went. It's just in his DNA. So that had always been a question. I mean, you look at the roster that he came into, that was, you know, I mean, it was a bad team. There was not many good players or leaders on there. Then I guess, you know, they brought in John Salmons after a while to be sort of the locker room leader. And you know, I don't think anybody really bought into much of what he had. Then it was Kendrick Perkins. So, you know, there was never really like a veteran like that earned a whole lot of respect, I think, in that locker room. And I think there was a lot of guys that weren't that engaged, like you would see in those successful dynamic teams like that Pistons team, or you know, those kind of hardworking teams. So it definitely had some effect on him, but I never like questioned his effort the whole time he was here until maybe about the middle of last year. We started to see him, or really a lot of last season, he sort of drifted through. And I at first was sort of thinking he didn't really like the style of play of being pushed out to the perimeter and not playing against, you know, not playing with his strengths. And then, you know, again, maybe he also grew frustrated with having to play center and they could never find him a center and things just faded. But then we got DeMarcus Cousins and there was like a bit of energy for a while. And then now we're back to like this lethargic AD for a lot of the time. I mean, we get those fiery games from him like we used to in his younger days, but I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the situation we're in. He's really tired of losing. If he doesn't like the style of play we're playing, if there's something going on in his personal life. And also, I mean, this stretch lately of lethargic Anthony Davis could also just stem from, is he fully recovered from his groin injury? I mean, he's settling for mid-range, mildly contested jumpers, step-back jumpers, instead of getting to the rim. So is that just, I don't want to put out the energy it takes to get to the rim, or is it just harder for me right now because I don't have the explosion that I'm used to? And that could be one thing. But even before the injury, there was wavering in his energy. And that was, you know, that's something that should be questioned. We do see him not play with fire all of the time. So I don't really know. I think it'd be a combination of a lot of things, but I don't know how to solve that either.
No, it's definitely got to be more a mental problem at this point than physical. I'm going to let David go on for a while, but Ali put up some great videos on Twitter last night of Anthony Davis just having the absence of awareness, specifically in the paint and at the three-point line, just not taking note of his surroundings, just ball watching, forgetting about the defender slipping behind him for the easy bucket, for the easy dunk, for the easy putback, for the easy offensive rebound. And offensively, I know what you're talking about with these and you posted about it in depth on Twitter last night as well. Him resigning himself to these 20-foot step-back baseline contested jumpers rather than driving towards the hoop. But even if he doesn't want to drive towards the hoop, some of these shots came with a lot of time left on the shot clock. The one that I'm specifically thinking of where he just held the ball and he just threw it up, there were 10 seconds left on the shot clock. David, what is going on psychologically with Anthony Davis? Like Kevin said, the fire is gone. The awareness is gone. It's almost like he's sleepwalking.
Well, there's three things that I like to look at when I look at any player. One is I do look at their backgrounds. And we have to remember that Anthony Davis came up from a very bad high school program where he was the best player, but he stayed with that program because he was one of the guys. Then you go to Kentucky, and he, while he was the most talented player on that team, he was not the guy. He was asked to defend and rebound primarily. When he gets to the Pelicans as a number one overall pick, the expectations are much different. And like you said, there's never been a real veteran presence of someone who could lead him and show him what it means to, A, be both a professional and what it means to lead a team. So now you look at this stage in his career where his game is better, but not really better. The areas where he need, like he's added the three-point shot, he's extended his range. But for a guy who's dealt with the physical injuries that he has not developed a post game, which mitigates the need to settle for jumpers. He doesn't have to live on the block. Anthony's a very slight guy. We know he doesn't like to take the pounding. But to have a turnaround hook that you can go to have an up and under that you can rely on, he doesn't have either one of those things, really. Or if he does have them, he doesn't utilize them. So you add that all on top of what appears to be a very lethargic attitude on defense right now. And it also seems like he's deferring a lot to DeMarcus offensively. He's taking fewer shots. And of course that was going to happen as Drew and DeMarcus's shots increase, but it's like the quality of the shots that Anthony's getting, the position that he's getting the ball. And then you also look at the fact that he'll go long stretches without demanding the basketball over the course of a game. So I don't think he has the personality to go out and say those things to be Kevin said, to be a rah-rah guy, to be a guy who fires people up. But at some point, if you want the responsibilities and of a franchise player, and you're going to tell people that winning is all that matters to you, what are you willing to put on the line to do that? And we've seen Anthony give effort, but have we seen the very best, or are we seeing him peak out at this stage of his career? Have we seen his best season already? And that was about 2 years ago. I don't know, but it feels like the Anthony Davis we're getting now is no longer on the trend to be a transcendent player. He's on the wave to be a very good player, probably a Hall of Fame player. But you're looking around at guys throughout the league who are his same age and relatively same skill set, and you feel like their upside now is greater than where Anthony's was a couple years ago.
Now, before we kill Anthony, I want to say that we're mentioning him, we're harping on him, because we do appreciate him and think he's one of the five best players in the world. He certainly has the talent to be the best player in the world if he ever puts it all together. And offensively, he's enjoying the best year of his career. I haven't given you guys a lot of numbers, but right now he's at 36% from three-point on the most shots he's ever taken, which is just two, but at 36%, well above his career high of 32% in 2015. He's shooting 58% from the floor. His efficiency is about 6/10 better than it's at least half a percentage better than it's ever been before. So he is playing great on that side of the floor, although the numbers are inflated by the month of December. I want to move on a bit. First, I'm just going to give you guys some numbers. I didn't give you guys any numbers at all today. This is the sixth time this year the Pels have fallen behind by 15 in the first half. Since being the best three-point shooting team following that Nets game, they've gone 34 for 116, good for 29%. They were out-rebounded 47-38. The Wolves, of course, scored 60 points in the paint and 69 points in the first half. Although they've been inconsistent throughout the year, Kevin, and I'm going to transition this to Alvin Gentry. This was certainly, in my opinion, the worst output of performance and energy we've seen from them so far this season. The first game where I felt like they honestly just did not give an F. And throughout the game, there was never really a charge with the Maybe DeMarcus Cousins had the best on-off numbers, but even he, it looked from the team as a whole as these guys just didn't care. They didn't need the win. They didn't feel like they wanted the win. And this all boils down to the big conversation that's happening on Twitter is what can you change? What can you do to make these guys buy in? Is it possible to go out and trade for a leader to potentially do some kind of swap like DeMarcus Cousins for DeAndre Jordan? That's just off the top of my head. Obviously, it's not logistical. But the easier thing to do, Kevin, is just to fire Alvin Gentry. And let me make sure I got Jacob Vicaire's question down right. He just says, why hasn't Alvin Gentry been fired yet? Don't get me wrong, I'm a diehard, but I think that what pisses me off the most, I know what our big three could do in the NBA, but our GM and our coach fail them every time. And we're going to cover Dell Demps. Let's just stick to Alvin Gentry. I don't think he's the problem, Kevin. I know your history with Alvin Gentry and what you mentioned earlier, but whether he's a good coach or not does not translate to what we saw on the floor last night. What we saw on the floor last night was a team that just hadn't bought in. And whether that's something that goes on in the locker room, you've still got Darren Erman, you've got Chris Finch, you've got Jamel McMillan, you've got well-respected guys who have a lot of clout in this league, and they still don't want to play for any of those guys, Alvin Gentry included. Kevin, do you think that the right course of action, regardless of whose fault any of this is to fire Alvin Gentry?
I mean, that's a hard question for me to answer just because, like I've always said, I never really valued what Alvin Gentry brought to this team. I never wanted him to be on this team. So, of course, like I think we could get better if we didn't have him. I think at best he's an average coach. And look, granted, coaching doesn't make as big of an impact in the NBA as it does in the NFL or whatever. It maybe swings you a couple games here or there. But I think at best he's that average coach that doesn't really affect things. At worst, he's a bad coach. And I don't necessarily think that he's like a bad coach, but I think he's the worst coach for what we have here. Because, you know, I get frustrated when I see a lot of other like bloggers or whatever tweet out like sort of in an insulting way to the fan base, like, oh yeah, Alvin Gentry makes the bigs play out on the perimeter. You know, like I know so much more than you. Fans are stupid for questioning the coach for this. There's no way that the coach is telling him to do this, whatever. I just really hate that take because if you actually break it down, Alvin Gentry stressed for Anthony Davis to start playing on the perimeter last year. He had Anthony Davis playing away from the basket. He had one of the most athletic big men in the league, and he didn't want him chasing offensive rebounds. He wanted to play transition defense when the defense overall was terrible, right? Even if the transition defense was number 9 at the time, I think it was, when I had this debate with somebody else. But the overall defense was like 27th or 28th. So how much was that really helping your defense when you could – I mean, sorry, this is the – yeah. So how much could this really help your defense if you could get offensive rebounds and putbacks? You could trade those off. And I didn't understand that philosophy to begin with. I think he's like a guy who votes against his own best interest when he has these two big men and he doesn't create a scheme that works off a pick and roll or a high-low game of Boogie in the post and AD cutting, things like that. Now, I understand they have a free-flow offense, and that's part of the problem because you have a guy like DeMarcus Cousins who is an incredible player when he plays inside, and he's a good player when he plays outside, but he could be a total dominant monster if he plays in the paint. But he has this tendency, which some people have, because having guard skills and playing on the perimeter is sexier, to want to show that I can do this too, and they focus too much on that. And DeMarcus Cousins has that tendency naturally to want to do that. So if you're saying, hey, let's just read and react and play, and I'm not calling plays that are getting you in the post or using you as a pick and roll man, then that's allowing you to play into your bad habits. Now, I also think that Gentry likes that those guys play out on the perimeter because I think it's a little bit like the problems that we used to see with Sean Payton, where he would want to have this prolific passing offense and he would ignore the run. Or he, like for years, my friends and I would be screaming, it's third and one. Why are we empty backfield? Like, even if you're going to pass the ball, why not have a running back there to make it seem like you might run on third and one, which you probably should do most of the time anyway. But it was like they thought they could have this incredible offense, and they had these numbers that proved it. And analytically, if we look at the Pelicans offense, you know, it looks great. The numbers are there to back it up, but it's a lot of empty calories because it's not playing to the actual strength of your team. And it's not doing what the defense doesn't want you to do. We're doing what the defense hopes we're doing. We're having these two guys taking jump shots. We're creating shots for other players instead of our two dominant big men. Or even Drew Holiday, you know, we're like trying to run plays for, like, you know, to close the game the other day. Like, Darius Miller is a great shooter, but that play was designed for Darius Miller, and then the second option was a three from Anthony Davis, which those are your two options. I don't know. In fourth quarter, all we talk about is who you want the ball at the end of the game. You want the ball in the hands of your stars. And, like, we, you know, people are criticizing that. People criticizing that play because they were like, oh, that play wasn't a three for Anthony Davis. No, it was a three for Darius Miller. But why not get Anthony Davis in his position of strength to bring that game to overtime at home with the bigs and foul trouble on the other team? You know, it's those kind of decisions that I just think he does take a lot of blame in the way these guys are playing. And he's contributing to their bad habits. And he's not a disciplinarian guy. He's not like the only coach that we know of that DeMarcus Cousins really liked and got along with was Mike Malone. And he's not like a yes man guy. He's a taskmaster that gives him hard love. And but he does it the right way. And I think that's the kind of coach that we need for the personality and the players that we have on this team. So I don't think Alvin Gentry is right for this team. I don't know about firing him midseason, but hey, that's the one change that you do control. And if this year is a failure, as it is anyway, if we're underachieving anyway, why not see if that can light a spark? I mean, I understand that. But then at the same time, I'm also like, well, we can just ride this out and then not re-sign them at the end of the year because they have an option. But, you know, why not create the turmoil? Maybe that will light a spark under some players. Maybe a new voice will change some things. Maybe the offense will slightly change. You know, we don't know. I mean, we saw what happened in Phoenix when they fired Earl Watson. They lit a spark under that team for a little while until Devin Booker got hurt. They were winning games. You know, so even a little spark when you're a team that's teetering on 500 the whole season, if you get that little spark and get a little run going, you get a little bit above 500 and we're fighting for the playoffs again, you know. So I see it as I wouldn't criticize anybody that's calling for Alvin Gentry's head, because what has he done that makes you feel like he's the right man for this job, that makes you feel like this team is playing the right way?
David, we don't have to worry about Mickey Loomis doing anything like firing Alvin Gentry or Dell Demps at this time, because we do have a lot of statistical evidence that suggests that Mickey Loomis isn't going to do anything until the Saints season has been over for at least 2 weeks. So we've got at least until mid-February before anything does take place. And what I'm referencing back to, and this happens every summer, you guys know as well as I do, here's the most recent comments that happened in the second week of May. And we were waiting, I think the last game of the season was April 11th. So it was about 3.5 weeks before we heard anything. Here are the comments. He said, after careful and thorough review of basketball operations, we have made the determination that the best course of action as we move forward into the 17-18 season is to continue under the leadership of general manager Dell Demps and head coach Alvin Gentry. Of course, these are the words of executive vice president of basketball operations, Mickey Loomis, who also happens to be the general manager of the New Orleans Saints. He said, we will continue to evaluate important roles on both the administrative and coaching staff, which will be resolved at the appropriate times. And then he continues, our organizational expectations and goals have not changed, and all of our efforts are focused on putting together a playoff caliber roster entering training camp and ultimately into the season. These were the words by Tom Benson, by the way. He said, the end result as we move forward, playoffs and winning a championship for our fans. And here's what I'm getting at. If Alvin Gentry is fired at some point, and you would have to think that news would come from Dell Demps, that seemingly would also in turn damn Dell Demps going forward. So it's something that you can't do one thing without doing the other. And with that being said, if Dell Demps thereby refuses to fire Alvin Gentry, wanting the chance for the Pelicans to go on some sort of run here, their schedule does get a bit easier the end of January through the first week of March, then the other explanation becomes, well, then let's package a couple of picks together and ship off Omar Asik and Alexis Ajinsa and see if we can't jumpstart this team with a bit more energy. And then you're possibly damning yourself a la the Brooklyn Nets for the next 2 to 3 years and setting back your rebuilding parameters back even further. So, David, something has to change. The fans are furious. Here's a couple of things Scott Kushner said. It is inexplicable how often these guys point to their lack of first half energy as the source of frustration and then routinely show up with no energy in the first half. I don't understand the entitlement at all. Last night, Kevin said, I stopped hoping Demps would fire Gentry and started hoping Ali Cosell would fire me. There's so many more of these. I'm going to continue getting to them, David. But the point is, something has to change. Something has to change. Fans are jumping ship. The team is a laughing stock to outside fan bases and ownerships and corporations. What is your method of getting this team to bounce back at such a crucial time? We all know what this season means. What would your course of action be to get these guys winning again and displaying effort, for God's sakes?
Well, I think the strangest thing is that and Scott was on the line, but the real thing is that they seem to have a belief that there's time. And that is what's strange to me, is that this team was built with a sense of urgency. And it, you know, during media day, Dell said it, Alvin said it. They all said that we have to do it this year. But then at the same time, Anthony Davis is saying there's plenty of time left. We can get this right. Well, there isn't plenty of time left. You're 38 games into the season now, so which is just about halfway. And while other teams we've seen around the league are starting to come together and gel and figure out their identities, the Pelicans are still no better than they were on day one of this season. I think Demps and Gentry are tied together no matter what. I don't see how you can let go of one and not evaluate the other just as harshly, because it seems, the strange thing to me was that they built a roster for Alvin that was probably more suited to what Monty Williams wanted to do. And the roster that Monty had was probably more suited to what Alvin wants to do. It's just a very strange mix of guys. And when Alvin got here, he said he wanted to make this team similar to Golden State. But we keep noting that Golden State is perennially top five in both offense and defense. You can't just say you're going to score like Golden State and then not defend the way they do, not have the ability to switch defenders, not have guys who are individually very solid, like a Klay Thompson and obviously a Draymond Green, and even a Kevin Durant who's been playing at center on a number of occasions and blocking shots at a higher rate than he ever has in his career. So I think I don't know if there's any short-term fix, because you don't want a hamstring if you are going to get rid of your general manager and coach. I don't see how you make a long-term investment in giving up draft picks at this point to try to make what kind of run to get to the sixth seed and lose still in the first round. Why would you put the next general manager or the next coach under those kind of restrictions when you don't know, you have no certainty on who's going to be back next year, whether it's on the player side or the management side, and what kind of team this is going to be going forward. I think you just have to ride out with what you have. If somebody on the waiver wire becomes available, or a second round draft pick for something that you think can help, then maybe you consider it. But unless you're going to give DeMarcus Cousins away at this stretch and try to make a trade for him before the deadline, you have no other real assets to give away to get something good in return that's going to make any type of movement of the needle.
Okay, there's a great article on thebirdrights.com. I just wanted to mention this before we go forward, by Ali Cosell, saying New Orleans Pelicans bucking conventional wisdom to stay afloat in a Western Conference playoff race. And he basically does a great job of breaking down how good the Pelicans have been on the road at this point. 10-9, much better. We talked last podcast with David Grubb about how the team hasn't really been effective at home as of late. But this is just another testament to how unpredictable this team is, how up and down, ebb and flow, that they go on a road game against the Denver Nuggets and lose by 32. And last night, of course, losing by 18, although, of course, it wasn't that close. Let's get to a couple more questions before we go any further. And this is from Rob, our buddy and kind of our boss at Nothing But Net Radio. He's got a couple of questions, but the one that I want to focus on right now is, as constructed, what is this team's ceiling? And of course, we've talked about this in depth, Kevin, being potentially a four seed, although now Minnesota's seven games on top of them. But here's what I want to ask you. At this point in time, 19-19, there's a very winnable 10-game stretch in front of the Pelicans right now. They've got the Pistons, the Grizzlies, the Blazers, the Knicks, the Celtics, the Hawks, the Grizzlies again, the Bulls, and the Hornets. How many of these games would you anticipate the Pelicans needing to win to keep their jobs? And should they go on a successful run, win, let's say, seven of these, what is their upside for the season end? What do you think their ceiling is?
If you could restart the season, I would say their upside ceiling is fourth, possibly fifth seed. Going from now, looking at the way we're playing, and what I had predicted this earlier on in the season. I think it was a couple pods ago, we were talking about how I pretty much assume that we're going to go 500 ball all the way to All-Star break. And then after the All-Star break, then we'll see what this team really is. They're either going to go on a big run or they're going to tank and lose and be a total disappointment. I think the ceiling right now is seventh seed. I think we're still just grappling for the eighth seed right now until we see that sense of urgency, until we see an offense that is kind of empty calories be something that's more substantial and more effort on defense and things, and you know, limit our turnovers and the dumb kinds of turnovers that we can limit. We're not playing the smart way right now, and if we can start playing smart and hard, then we could be the seventh seed, but I don't see us getting, we dug ourselves too much of a hole to really make any noise in the rankings. But I think once they get in the playoff, you know, they'll if they get into a playoff series, you'll see them play hard and they'll give you a good series. They may not win a game, but they'll make the games interesting, I think.
David, the question continues, do you think they make a deadline move? And if so, who or what do they target and who would they make available? And something Kevin and Ali and I were talking about last night is a team who is a dramatic seller at this point, is somebody like the Orlando Magic. And of course, the Pelicans could go over there and get some version of Jonathan Simmons and Nikola Vucevic for Alexis Ejenta and Omar Asik. Obviously, that doesn't add up completely. They'd need to throw, or the Pelicans would need to throw another $2 million in salary, and they'd probably have to saddle maybe a couple of first-round picks in exchange for those guys. But my point is this. Obviously, the Pelicans don't want to do that. With Dell Demps and Alvin Gentry potentially looming as lame duck people in the front office, that's a really risky move to go through. Another option is trading DeMarcus Cousins and just planning for the future at this point. And if Anthony Davis leaves, he leaves. Here's my point. Let me hear your side of things. The Pels have a really great stretch of games coming up. They've got an opportunity to get back ahead of this thing. And it all culminates after a 12-game stretch with the Sacramento Kings in New Orleans on January 30th. If they can't win like eight of these next 12 games, I think you cut ties with Demps and Gentry and you see what you can do in the remaining 8 days before the trade deadline. What's your thought process here, David?
Yeah, at some point, especially like you said, during a softer part of the schedule, even though there are a lot of one-day breaks between games, it doesn't matter with the Pelicans how many days off they have between games. They're inconsistent. But during this kind of stretch, these are the ones you're supposed to make up ground on. But we thought that going into the holidays that they should have closed out with a 5-game win streak at least with those games at home. So, yeah, they need to win 8 out of 12 here. At some point, you've got to start winning 2 out of 3 ball games to establish yourself as a legitimate playoff team. I don't know if they can do that. So, like you said, as they get closer to the trade deadline, what are your tradable assets? Who wants what you have? And I don't think anybody wants to take on that. Like you said, you're going to have to take back bad deals to get rid of bad deals. So either you're going to extend with those number one picks, or you're going to have to give up better players than Ejenta and Asik. And if it becomes Cousins, then you basically are deciding, again, for the next general manager, if that's the case, or the next coach, now what is the identity of our team? And you are firmly establishing that Anthony Davis is your guy. And if that's the case, too, are you correct in that evaluation? And knowing that Drew and Anthony are probably going to be your top two players going forward for the foreseeable future, because you don't have a number one draft pick if you make a deal, and free agents aren't flocking, excuse the pun, to New Orleans.
Kevin, something that we haven't talked about, well, we did briefly last night, and you guys laughed me off the Twitter DM conversation, was the Pelicans have to make a change, and if they can't surrender picks, and if they can't fire their coach and fire their GM, they have to get a little not unconventional with their thinking. And somebody who's had a really good year for the Pelicans and has a really attractive contract is, of course, their starting three guard, I should say, right now, but he does close games for them. Of course, I'm talking about Etuan Moore, the best three-point shooter in the league right now. He's really developed defensively. I'd say he's a decent defender. He gives pretty good energy, and he rotates well, and he's got good feet. Offensively, though, is where he has really taken off with his floater. He's one of the best finishers for the Pelicans, if not in the conference. Can use both hands, absolves contact, and still always gets a great shot off. And here's my methodology, I guess I should say, in this is you take one problem by taking away your crunch time two guard, but you possibly create a solution in somebody like, a PJ Tucker or Jonathan Simmons, somebody who can start at the three for you and play some backup 4 minutes next to somebody like DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis, and give great energy. Is this a trade chip that you're willing to explore, Kevin?
I'm a very big Etuan Moore. Been since he got here. If you go back to the offseason where we signed him, I wrote like his team preview, and you could tell I was very excited about him. You know, I loved his I watched a bunch of Chicago tape that year, and I loved his inside game. He had an incredible floater. He's last season, Ollie and I would go back and forth on it because I was always pro Etuan and he was not so into Etuan at the time, but I felt like Etuan was underperforming, but I think he was kind of hurt and was sort of being marginalized as just a spot up shooter a little bit last season. And this year we've gotten to see more of the game that we saw when he was in Chicago. And like you said, I mean, he's leading the league in 3-point shooting. We need shooting, and he does all the small things out there. His lateral quickness is a little bit of a problem on defense, and his size is a bit of a problem. He's playing the small forward spot, but you know, he always is engaged and is always trying. And he does so many other little things that I think it'd be tough to get rid of him. I would have to be a move that you would see, you know, a really big upgrade. And I just don't think that you're even going to get that with sending Etuan out. So I would definitely try to keep Etuan on this roster unless you get blown away. One thing we could talk about, too, is that, I mean, the Lakers did buy out Andrew Bogut, and one of our biggest weaknesses has been the backup big man. And, you know, if you talk about leadership and on-court stuff and championship pedigree, he brings all that. Now you have to try to convince him that he's going to be playing for a winning team, possibly even a team that can make a run in the playoffs, because other teams are going to be trying to get him as well. But I mean, imagine like having a player like Bogut play in smaller minutes for you as a backup big. He's a guy that's, you know, one of the best facilitating centers in recent history. You know, he's a good defender. He has a familiar with Gentry's offense, obviously, from playing with him at Golden State. And hey, he's the guy that they tried to say they were going to make Oshik into. So obviously they value that kind of a player. And you can get that little bit of upgrade without sacrificing your future. I mean, you have to waive a player, obviously. And, you know, perhaps Dante would be the one to go since you're going to be replacing his minutes. And Darius has stepped up and can play some small ball four. But another thing that I think you could just do is if, obviously, Gentry is not trusting Rondo much anymore, and Ollie wrote that article showing his bit of a lapse on the defensive end and stuff like that. And I think we've seen a lot of lineups now where we can see that Drew is playing okay when he's on the ball some. So possibly you could do more lineups where you have Etuan in the backcourt and Drew in the backcourt, and then Darius out there with AD and Boogie And that could solve some of the problems too, because it fixes some of the size issues, fixes some of the defensive issues, and that that offensive lineup should be powerful. So those are just ways that you can make some adjustments to also, and you get also Jameer Nelson, who's been terrible, and with his size, he can't defend, he can't stop penetration from the opposing team's point guard. But if you had Drew back there guarding the opponent's point guard, stopping him from penetrating and prodding, you know, you could see an uptick in all those things. So I don't think we're going to make a trade. It would be tough. And then if you going to fire Demps, who's going to be making that trade? I don't know. I mean, is they're going to bring in Danny Ferry again to make a move, or who's going to be the guy who's pulling those strings? You have to hire somebody really quickly without an interview process. So, you know, those are tough questions. And I think they're just going to ride out this season. And like I said, Gentry has a team option in his contract. So they could just, even if we make the playoffs, which is what I've predicted that we'll do, we'll make the playoffs and then realize that we're underachieving with this coach, and then sort of sell it as a retirement, or he wants to take a step back and maybe he goes seeks some assistant coaching jobs again, or, you know, takes a year off or whatever, and everybody saves face. Then we get to move forward. I think that's what's going to happen, but I really don't see us making much. I don't think we're going to make a trade. I really don't. I just don't think, if you're not confident in Demps, which they might not be, which maybe they should not be with the way the team is performing, you know, why would you let him, again, make another trade? Why would you let these guys who are about to be fired, possibly, or at least are being, their job status is being questioned, make moves in what is, you know, probably the most important offseason in team history so far?
Well, the Pelicans have to make a trade, unfortunately, as I understand, and I'll let David refute me if I'm wrong on this, but the Pelicans are pressed against the dead cap, and all 15 of their salaries are fully guaranteed. So even should they part ways with somebody like Jameer Nelson or Dante Cunningham, they still don't have the available flexibility to bring in somebody like Andrew Bogut. Something they could do is exercise their hardship exception as long as Tony Allen is out. But even with that, they don't have the funds available should all four of them stay out for the remainder of the season to guarantee somebody for the full remaining, I want to say, 44 games. Does that sound right to you, David, or am I way off here?
No, you're right. I mean, they are pressed right up against there. So I don't know how they could sign anybody, even with the release right now. But I mean, I would love to have a guy like Andrew Bogut. Like you said, he defensively, offensively, he's a great fit. And I think especially, you know, one of the things you've heard Jrue Holiday talk about, in games that you don't hear enough of, was how effective Oshik was in setting screens for him and getting him one-on-one matchups with bigs so he could attack the rim or find jump shots that he really liked. So I think that they need a dirty work guy in the front court to do some of that. Dante Cunningham's not really good at that. DeMarcus and Anthony aren't really built for that either. DeMarcus is built for it, but he doesn't do it. You see a lot of lazy screens there. But what I would like to see, and talking about lineup changes, Jameer Nelson should get no minutes at this point. He doesn't bring anything to the table. And I believe, and I've said this before, that Ian Clark could be a really good combo guard for this team. I think he can handle the ball. His assist to turnover ratio is pretty good. It's better. It's much better than Nelson's has been this year. He's shown the ability to get to the rim. We know he can shoot. And he's getting these spot minutes where he'll have a great game and then he's gone. But if you change the lineup a bit, give Drew more time on the ball, as Kevin is saying, put Etuan back at the two, and you have Darius at the three maybe as your starting group with Cousins and Davis, and then your second unit point guard becomes Clark, and you're running Clark as your two, Clark as your point, moving Drew off the ball then and letting him shoot more. And then you can play some Etuan at the three then with your second unit and still have that scoring out there. And like you said, play Darius as a forward, a small ball lineup. I think they could be more effective that way, and you're mitigating some of those defensive failures, because Dante's been awful defensively this year. And I think, you know, Darius can get better, and Darius also brings something that Dante doesn't have to the table, the ability to pump fake, get into the lane. And he's also shown the ability to be a willing passer and a solid passer. So I think there are some lineup changes that would improve the play somewhat. But again, yeah, even then you're just kind of rearranging the chairs and at the peak, this team is probably a 7 seed. So I don't know if there's a lot of flexibility to make this team better. You're pretty much forced to ride this thing out over the last 44 games of the season.
Kevin, why don't you continue with that thought? We only have about 10 minutes left, and I do want to preview some of our upcoming games with you guys. So just take about a minute for us with the roster as it is currently constructed, with Solomon Hill potentially coming back in the next 2 months and Tony Allen probably coming back in the next 2 to 3 weeks. Do some lineup adjustments as well. Obviously, Etuan Moore got taken a task by Andrew Wiggins last night. Just being a smaller player, I think he stands at about 6'4". How would you construct the roster around what the Pelicans have to help improve the defensive side of the floor?
Well, I mean, I think David and I had basically the same lineup in mind. You know, we roll out there to start Drew, Etuan, Darius, AD, and Cousins. And then you can bring Rondo off the bench, or you could bring Ian Clark off the bench. But obviously, I agree with David, too, that Jameer, I mean, I remember we had that podcast right after the Memphis preseason loss where we looked awful. And that was when people were starting to talk about Jameer coming here. And I said, if Jameer Nelson is the answer, then the question is terrible, because, like, he's average at best. And sure, I think a lot of people wanted him to be the savior because they suggested him coming over to the Pelicans. So in the early week, he had a couple of good games, and everybody's like, oh, he's the savior of the season. And now we're just seeing what Jameer Nelson is. I mean, he's average. He's an average level player at best who has a lot of deficiencies. I mean, he's really small. He can't stop these bigger guards that the league has trended towards. And he's not, and when his shot's not falling, he's basically useless. It's the same with Dante Cunningham. If he's not scoring, if he's not hitting the open corner three, then he's useless to you, because this year, for some reason, he's not showing any semblance of defense. He's rebounding a little bit better, but I don't know how much of that is just maybe the increase in pace and the number of possessions he's out there. But I mean, he does seem like he's doing better on the glass for sure. But yeah, you just tinker with the lineup some, and you know, you play Darius more at the four, because I mean, you might be giving up size there, but you weren't getting any defensive stoppage from Dante Cunningham anyway. So at least Darius is stretching the defender. He's a really good playmaker, and he's been a good on ball defender. I've seen him like guard pretty well on ball. You know, now making switches and adjustments and getting lost in picks and screens is another thing, but you know, at least if you're given the on-ball effort, that's, you know, you're given more than what Dante was given. He's been a huge disappointment so far this year. And, you know, Ian Clark, again, I wasn't mad at the signing at all. Like, I think he's a fine player, but I wasn't, like, super excited about it. I think initially people thought he was the kind of guy that was going to get, like, a $6 million a year deal. And when we were talking about that being a possibility, I did not want that to happen. But once we signed him for a minimum, I was like, cool. And I wasn't expecting a lot out of him, but he's been giving me more than what I expected when he's out there. And I think he's earned more minutes, definitely more than Jameer Nelson. So having him on the floor more should be a positive as well. And you just sort of go with tighter rotations until you get Hill back. And once you get Hill back, that will also give you another piece that you could play at the three or at the four in small ball situations that helps on your defense. And that's why I don't think they're going to make a trade, just because they don't have the ammo to do it. Or if they do have the ammo to do it, it's just it's going to be sacrificing too much of the future for what you're actually getting back. But there are ways to just change the way that we're playing that would fix a lot of the problems. And then again, that points back to why aren't we doing this, and who's the person who can make these calls, and that is Alvin Gentry. So is he the right person going forward? That's for everyone to decide.
Okay, we're pretty much out of time. Kevin, before we get to our very quick previews, let's say you get a phone call right now from Cleveland Cavaliers GM, and they offer you that Brooklyn pick is on the table, along with Tristan Thompson and some version of, I don't know, Jeff Green for Ian Clark and DeMarcus Cousins and a second round pick. At this point in time, do you say yes?
No, I don't say no.
David?
No, Oh, I don't like the money that you're taking on with those two guys. I think that's just as bad.
All right. Thought I'd ask. All right. So coming up, we've got the Detroit Pistons, we've got the Memphis Grizzlies, and we've got the Trail Blazers. Two of these three games are at home. We have 5 minutes left, David. So actually, I'll start with Kevin. Kevin, who do you or give us a win-loss record for these three games, first of all? The Pistons are at home, the Grizzlies are in Memphis, and the Blazers are in New Orleans on Friday.
I think we go 2-1 in that order. I think we beat the Pistons. They've been kind of up and down and inconsistent since Reggie Jackson got hurt. And I think, you know, they're vulnerable. And I think if this team doesn't come out with fire, then I don't know what can fire them up. And then they should definitely, if they don't come out with first half energy in that game, then they should fire Alvin Gentry at halftime, because there's just something needs to happen. You know, somebody needs to be sacrificed. That's just how it is. And then Grizzlies, you know, I think Tyreek's going to definitely have reason to try to kill us and put up a really big game. I think it's going to be closer than it should be, but I think we're going to ultimately we'll win that contest. And then Portland's always a tough team for us. And I just think we got them the last time, and I think our luck's going to run out on that end. I just think they're going to outshoot us, and that's it. I think we're not going to be able to hang with them.
David, what about you?
I'm a little bit more concerned about the Pistons game. I don't know if they'll lose it or not, but you know, the one thing that the Pistons do really well is rebound, and those second chance opportunities for them are going to be huge. And I think Tobias Harris is going to be a problem for the Pelicans. So if he gets hot, of course, if they don't keep Andre Drummond off the glass, but they should win that game. It's a, you know, you're coming home, like Kevin said, if they don't come out with energy for that game, then I agree. I mean, it shows that this team is completely lost, and I don't know how they find their way back. Memphis is a game that they should absolutely win. They seem to be completely dysfunctional at this point. And then with Portland, yeah, it's tough, just because in each of the two Portland games, one of the guards has been horribly off. So you figure at one point Lillard and McCollum have to have put a complete game together and go off. So I would put that as the most likely loss of the three, with the Pistons being a toss-up for me.
All right. I want to thank the questions that we got from our listeners. Some guys we didn't get to: Phelps, Lot, Solomon, Eagles, 2001. We mentioned their questions or the general ideas around their questions, but apologize for not reading it straight off of Twitter. All right, guys, that's it for now. Pelicans fans, enjoy the Saints game. It's going to be a big one. Manny Fresh has already started DJing. I'm coming at you guys from 4:09 Eastern. So if you are in New Orleans, make sure you check that out. It's obviously a tough time to be a Pelicans fan, but for those of you idiots who just keep watching like us, be sure to check back later in the week. The Pelicans may have abandoned you guys this season, but we on the Bird Calls podcast will not. With all that being said, the Pelicans are bound to bounce back. This is what they do. They lose a couple in spectacular fashion, then they come back and impress you. So I do expect some positive basketball in the next couple of games, as these guys have just said, getting back above 500. And ultimately, if we get to a seventh seed, at least we're in the playoffs. And it'll be the third time in 8 years, so certainly not mad about that. But for now, thank you guys for listening. My name is Preston Ellis. Thank you to David Grubb. Follow him at DM Grubb and Crescent City Sports. Kevin is at Kevin B for Bounce. Make sure you go to thebirdrights.com. There's excellent stuff from Ali and from Kevin. By the way, shout out to Ali. Feel better, my friend. He is not feeling well today. And let's get out of here. Go Saints, and let's bounce back, Pelicans. Thank you for listening to the Bird Rights on Nothing But Net Network here on Dash Radio. If you like what you're hearing, take 1 minute to go to iTunes, search the Bird Rights, subscribe, and rate our podcast today. Let's go, Pels!